Welcome to the Quantum Feedback Loop podcast. I'm your host, James Myers, and I also publish The Quantum Record, which features the latest in science and technology. I was pleased to welcome privacy specialist Saima Fancy back to the podcast. Last year, Saima and I addressed the question, why privacy matters on the road to artificial general intelligence, and in our most recent discussion, we explore the growing movement to ensure that humans are in the loop of automated processes, able to control and, where required, override algorithms. Our discussion was recorded before Meta, the company that operates Facebook, recently announced that it will eliminate human content moderators on the premise that algorithmic moderation will be less biased. This particular move to eliminate a human-in-the-loop process begs the question, how is it that a human can program a machine to be less biased than a human? As Saima said during our talk, we're going to have to redefine what good and bad is. Humanity has never had to contend with technology of this kind ever before, but let's own up to it. So Saima is a techno-optimist who sees a great potential for AI to advance human abilities, but she's also a realist who acknowledges the problems and the possible solutions. One solution that Saima says should be considered is for companies to appoint a chief human-in-the-loop officer, a position that could reduce risks, protect business integrity, and provide a competitive advantage for customers who value privacy and equity. This is intended to be the first of a number of discussions that we'll hold on the important subject of human-in-the-loop, setting the stage to delve into specific industries and activities with an overview of the idea and issues that the growing human-in-the-loop movement is contending with. I hope that in listening to this episode, you'll see as much potential for the benefits of human-in-the-loop as Saima and I do. Well, welcome back to the Quantum Feedback Loop, Saima. I'm looking forward to discussing human-in-the-loop with you today.
Oh, so excited to be here. Can't wait to get started.
Well, you know, human in the loop is a term that I think I first heard in a posting that you made, but now I'm seeing it a lot more in other commentaries. And so I wonder if you could just take us back into the history of the term, and then I think we'll talk about some of the issues that this is meant to address.
It's a fairly new concept. It started not too long ago. Sorry, I'm just recollecting my thoughts on something else that I had read recently on it. So the late 20th century is when the concept began. So it's not ancient old, just like AI isn't either. I think the need for it was understood by the Fenmans of the world and Turings of the world. They kind of were soothsayers. They saw it coming. Initially, it was machine in the loop, right? Somehow in the last 5 years, the tables really turned and these folks did see it coming. And now it's a real term. It's one that we have to contend with. And I find it to be such irony for humanity right now. I mean, when you log in and, you know, to some sites and you're asked, are you a robot? It just, you know, it's mind boggling now that we have to contend with that.
Yeah. And I've dealt with a number of those tests, which I've actually failed a few of them. So maybe that means I'm a robot.
There you go.
So I guess historically, you know, the idea with the Industrial Revolution and all of that was that things could be automated, machines could do things that humans would otherwise do. And then I guess now we're at the stage where maybe machines are doing a little bit too much, or they're not being programmed properly to do the things that we expect them to do. And so the idea, I guess, with human in the loop is to insert human intervention at some point in a program process. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially for validation purposes, right? With data quality being such an issue in industry, which is what these models rely on, it's going to become critical to make sure that human is not just in the loop per se in one instance, but in different instances of, for example, a software development lifecycle, the operational development lifecycle. We're going to need engineers, technologists, ethicists, legal folks, people of all kinds of backgrounds in all these different touch points in that SDLC cycle. And it's interesting, the kinds of folks we need are privacy and security engineers. And I was just speaking to a student at CMU right now who's doing her master's in privacy engineering. And she's like, what does that really mean in the industry? And I like to align myself with that concept. And these are folks who are philosophers, philanthropists, technologists, understand the law, regulation, compliance, understand standards, are able to communicate with legal on one hand, with operations on another, with engineers on another, and then are able to validate the processes per se. We need people to be multidisciplined now. These humans in the loop will have to be of multidisciplinary backgrounds.
Yeah, and that's a really good point because I think things are evolving so quickly that a lot of the outcomes are not anticipated. And a lot of the outcomes, like some of the outcomes, deal with legal issues, some of the outcomes deal with ethical issues. You can't just have one person just siloed in one of those areas and not able to address the others. I mean, it's just the complexity of some of these systems, I guess, is.
It's too much. I mean, just think of where you want the human in that loop of the LLM being trained. It can't just be an ethicist who doesn't understand technology or vice versa. It can't just be a lawyer who doesn't understand technology and vice versa. We are embarking upon a time where we need very specialized and nuanced human beings who understand a lot of these things, and not just one or two, but a few of them, teams of them in these different touch points in the cycles. And then we're going to need overseers, and I did a post about that too, the chief human in the loop officer. We're going to need someone like that as well. It's a paradigm shift we're living in. We have to contend with this. I know this is not a normal way of thinking, but here we are, aren't we?
Yeah, though indeed. And I think it's part of the issues that we're facing is that the regulations haven't really caught up to all of the developments in the technology. And you know, one of the things that you mentioned was data quality, which I think is becoming a real issue, is it not, with the LLMs, the large language models, in terms of the data that's being fed into them and the
It's
outputs?
yeah, it's an issue not as far as the model itself is concerned, because it's not a living entity. It was programmed to work as such. The issue is in the ingest side of things. The issue is in the quality of data that's being harvested, collected, harnessed, and then pushed into the LLM. That's the stage we're having trouble with, and I think big tech is now starting to run out of data that's being scraped off the internet. We're going to have a data deficit very soon, let alone quality data, right? Then the other issue is we have humans who are in the loop in that end of the cycle as well, who are classifying and tagging that data. So, what is a dog? What is a cat? It's based on their understanding, and there's a whole set of ethical issues that we as humanity have to contend with there. These folks, in the Philippines, parts of Asia, in Africa, are having to look at images without any regulations in place that are extremely disturbing, and they're having to label pornography, sadism, and all these really complex and obscene concepts, and there is no remedy for them for what the aftermath of that is. So we need to contend with that issue as well, which is also what's feeding into the quality of data, right? And lack thereof.
For sure. And our previous episode was discussing that very issue with content moderation, with human content moderators. So I understand, you know, platforms like X now are going primarily to automated content moderation, but I think, you know, that a lot of people are saying that's not adequate. And so then other large platforms like Meta, for example, like Facebook, are using human content moderators. But as you say, they're having to experience some pretty awful stuff when they see these things. So the human is in the loop in that case, but is the human being treated fairly? And one of the issues that we talked about in that discussion was whether there are any standards, and there really aren't any standards for what they're supposed to do, and there's no standards for how they're supposed to be treated. So there's definitely that issue there.
Right, it can't be a siloed conversation, right? Okay, so there's one thing we're talking about. We need the human in the loop. Okay, fine. We need them in various loops. Okay, fine. So we've got a bunch of humans. Now, are these humans trained for that purpose? What are they going to be exposed to? Are there regulations for humans in the loop? No. Regulations will never, ever be able to get caught up. It'll never be able to keep pace. We need to create other mechanisms to guard these spaces. And I think as humanity, we haven't come across a set solution, with the exception of having standards like NIST and ISO standards. And they're going to have to evolve to take this element into account. It's one that's here, it's one that needs to be contended with sooner than later.
And so your specialty is privacy. What standards are there in that area that could apply to human in the loop? Is it a question of taking standards from the ethicist, from the privacy specialist, from all of these different areas, and then kind of trying to combine them into some comprehensive human in the loop standard?
Yeah, in the beginning, that's what's going to have to be done. It's going to have to be a stitching mechanism, but eventually, it's going to have to be an entity or a guideline of its own, because this particular arena is going to require a lot of philosophy. It's going to require ethics and society folks to come in. It's going to require philosophy of science to come in. Hence, now we need to contend with the fact that we can no longer just deal with technologists. We need technologists who have studied philosophy, who are philanthropists. Only then can we have this combined effort and these standards formed. We're going to need new ones very soon.
And that's a problem area, I guess, because that's the soft science in terms of there's maybe no right or wrong answers, but it's more a question of people are going to have to discuss and reach some sort of consensus on what should be acceptable and where the humans are really needed.
Yeah, we're going to be in a space we're going to have to redefine what good and bad is, right? We thought Aristotle and Plato looked after that. Here we go again, right?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot of bad and some good. So, I think it, as you say,
Yeah,
it's.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, we have to be techno-optimists here. It's here. Let's deal with it. This tool is here. It's terribly exciting. It's phenomenal. It's got amazing potential. But like with anything else, it's got downsides, right? And yes, humanity has never had to contend with technology of this kind ever before. But then let's own up to it. We created it to manipulate ourselves. Humans created this to manipulate humans. We need to wake up to that fact and deal with it accordingly. But what we are seeing is the ugliness of ourselves. And that's the hardest part that we're going to have to contend with. And that's why I bring philosophy and ethics into this piece, because we haven't looked at that yet. We haven't looked at ourselves in the mirror until now, and it's not a pretty sight.
As you said earlier, the data classification problem, that terrible issue. I think it was maybe 2018 when Google's algorithm labeled a picture of two gorillas as black people. And so then they've tried to compensate since then to adjust the algorithms. And so algorithms now don't identify gorillas at all.
Yeah,
So, but yeah.
exactly. And look, it's not a done and set solution, no doubt. But if these conversations continue to happen, then the Waymos of the world, these AVs that are out there in San Francisco, will continue to be modified and corrected such that they're not running over colored people versus white people, right? But if it's these conversations that are causing that to happen, it's associations like the Algorithmic Justice League that are causing pivotal change within technology. So we are at a point in time where our forefathers, the Aristotles of the world, Socrates had said intellectual studies involve both the practical, the applied sciences, and the social sciences. We're here. We can no longer rip the two fields apart like we've done in our universities. It's a gross injustice to this area. I guess what I'm getting to is we're going to have to go down further into our educational systems, where we're going to have to create new programs just to address these fields.
And the discussion part is very important because it's not one person making the decision or just a small group of people making the decision. It re really requires a broader discussion and continual updating because issues are always coming up that are not anticipated.
And you also don't want that power to be trickled down to just a few folks. You do want it to be a community effort. Only then can you exact justice, right?
For sure. And I wanted to take that optimistic viewpoint, maybe just a little bit later in the discussion, in terms of how things can be dealt with and what progress is being made. But maybe just start off with some of the issues without getting maybe too frightening about it. But I think we've seen some issues. There was one issue that keeps coming up in the news, and this is the UK Post Office scandal, where the algorithm, the software, I think it was called Horizon. I think it was initiated in the late 1990s, and over the course of a decade or more, it misidentified 900 post office workers as having stolen from the post office or done unethical things,
When they
and it,
hadn't.
when they hadn't exactly, and it's caused real problems. And so, when these software applications are making decisions that affect people's lives in this way, in a real way, like in terms of legal outcomes, that to me is one example where human in the loop, part of the issues, I guess, with human in the loop is that people will see it as an expensive fix and they'll try to avoid it. But I think that's maybe one of the things we can discuss in a bit is the investment in human in the loop could pay off. That Horizon scandal with the UK Post Office, I understand it's now cost over £1 billion in settlement.
Look at that.
So it could have been avoided, maybe.
Exactly. And it's like if you go back to history of human innovation, but we're in the fifth industrial revolution. We're just entering it right now with quantum computing leading the way. But if you go back with the printing press, with seat belts coming in, right? Everybody shouted and screamed, "What do you mean I need to wear a seatbelt? This is so inconvenient. I can't believe we're having to do this. It's against my, constitutional right and all that BS." Well, it saved a lot of lives. It brought healthcare costs down. So we need to be able to look beyond all of this as humanity. And again, it's a community effort. Again, we are at a very pivotal moment in humanity's evolution, and we're having to speak out loud, and we must. We can't allow these postal type these postal incident from happening. We can't allow Black men from not being chosen to get their cardiac surgery because the algorithm discriminated against them and chose white men first. We cannot allow women not to be selected for engineering roles, and only men getting ahead. None of this should be allowed, or a wife being declined for credit line even though she makes more than her husband, but her husband got approved. These are real life cases, real life injustices that need to be spoken and talked about, just like the you and I are. And who created that bias? It's not an alien. We did. The
We did,
programmers did. The checks and balances need to be done at the coding level, the data ingest level. But who's doing that? Humans.
It's not that they intended to do it, presumably, but it's just the way it happened based on, again, maybe problem with data, that a lot of the training data is based on, for example, white men. And so facial recognition algorithms are not good on people of color.
Right, but then where does the onus lie? The onus lies on the corporation that is collecting that data. The human in the loop needs to be there as well to make sure data quality is checked. The checks and balances have to start there, right? You can't blame AI. AI is a thing we made. You can't blame a car for getting into an accident. You have to blame the driver, right? So same scenario here. It's just that we're just in this time, and it frustrates me to no end when I looked at LinkedIn and AI is being demonized. It's like, wait a minute, people. It's a tool that we created. It's like somebody taking a knife either to butter their bread or to hurt someone else. It's a tool, right?
Yeah, with great potential for sure.
Great potential. I mean, I love working with my tools, with my AI tools, but I also know that I'm going to do it mindfully and meaningfully.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you talk about the issue of self-driving cars running over people of color, for example. I guess part of the problem with without human in the loop, it kind of clouds the legal responsibility for these things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the legal tech space too, right? If lawyers are using AI tools, or some courts are now using tools to make judgments, that there is that onus. There's a town in, I forget, I think it's in Switzerland, that's the church, they're using AI for confessions. I mean, it's gone to that extent. Where's the human there? What happened to the priest, right? So it is getting out of control. Yes, I do agree with that. But these conversations that like you and I are having need to be elevated and need to be brought on larger platforms.
I heard an ad the other day for an online tool that advertises that its AI will help you to do a will. And having dealt with settling a number of estates myself, I know how complex it can be. And, does the algorithm know what questions to ask to elicit really the person's true intent? That's the kind of thing that I guess we need to
And
worry about.
estates are so unique to every family or every situation, right? So there's the emotive piece that's missing there. Yeah.
And people might not express themselves in the way that they truly intend, and that's where an actual human discussion can verify that what a person says is what they really intended. Because
Exactly. Same thing in the medical field, right? People are using AI tools to for diagnosis purposes, and like, okay, that's it. That's a gospel word. Well, no, get the doctor to double check it to make sure that that is correct. Get them to validate it. Let's bring our folks in that end process. So you can very well use the tools for your estate planning that you use to advise your clients, but you'll be there to make sure that the output is correct.
And I think there's more processes being automated in the military side too, which I think are of concern. I mean, I've written about the US Army's Replicator initiative that is trying to automate weapon systems to overcome the advantage of the enemies who have more people to throw into battle. And so they're trying to automate drone swarms and all sorts of things. Again, if ever there was human in the loop needed, I would think it's there.
Exactly. But it starts with conversations at the micro level to be elevated to the macro level for change to be made, right? So it's a matter of, I always bring it down to education. It's a matter of education, educating our young people and then carrying that through the educational system so that they're aware.
No, for sure. Well, so I mean, we've talked about some of the issues that are making human in the loop more important. What are some of the benefits? Where have we seen some of the benefits of human in the loop in terms of processes that have been changed, perhaps maybe even more recently, where humans have been inserted because perhaps a problem has been encountered, and now with human in the loop, it's working better.
Yeah, in the diagnostic fields within the medical industry, it is really helping out where based on the data that was fed to the algorithm, it found a woman who it said claimed had breast cancer, but really it was a benign lump, right? But can you imagine if diagnoses like that get out without the radiologist checking and double checking what that woman would go through? So there are these checks and balances coming in place, especially in the healthcare sector, which makes me so happy. In a lot of industries, it's not insurance, it's not in some of the fintech sectors, it's not, but even the banks are now slowly starting to change. Rejected applications to say credit lines and credit cards are now slowly being looked after because enough people have screamed and shouted, like the husband-wife scenario where the husband's like, that makes no sense to me, you know. So you do hold the people accountable, and that's what we need. We need the public at large to have the confidence to go back and say, I appeal this decision. I think this was incorrect. You must take me to your manager. So we need to question authority. And a lot of cultures don't have that, unfortunately, where if a doctor says, well, used an AI tool and it generated the wrong diagnoses, well, a lot of people may not want to go question that. But I think we're at a space and time in, within humanity's lives where we need to question everything we see.
And I've heard that AI tools can actually help to identify things that might not be otherwise uncovered in medical diagnostics, but that the doctor's experience, understanding what the importance of that thing is key and critical. And that's and the combination of the AI plus the doctor's experience is producing really good outcomes.
Right, exactly. So, for example, there's one scenario I know where I can share with you in the dental sector where this young girl that I know has an infected wisdom tooth. It needs to be taken out. It's causing her a lot of issues. So the doctors used AI diagnostic tool to do the scanning and found, okay, so it's infected, it's swollen the area, it needs to be pulled out. One doctor told her that we're going to pull it out and you will suffer nerve damage. And that's just it. And he's like, okay, let me book you in and go ahead. And she wasn't comfortable with that. She went to another doctor and who said, based on my experiences, I do see the root there, but I think I can maneuver around it once I'm there and I'll make sure we minimize nerve damage. The first doctor said, well, my AI tool said that this is what I have to do, extract the entire thing. The nerve will get pulled out. That's what I'm going to do. Right. Now she had enough wherewithal to say, no, I'm not happy with that. You did have the human in the loop there, though. In fact, he went with the AI. So there's that as well. It's nuanced. Now she was wise enough to go to the second one and has booked her appointment with the second one who said, no, based on all the previous surgeries I've done, I know I can maneuver around it and maintain the integrity of your nerve. Right.
That's a really good example, actually. Yeah.
This just happened last week, actually. And
Yeah.
here, both doctors use the AI tool. So there's a
Yeah.
bit of that as well. So, what I'm saying is, we as people, as consumers of this knowledge, really need to be vigilant, really need to arm ourselves with knowledge and communicate with other professionals.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the professionals who are using this and think that they can rely on it,
100%. Yeah.
yeah.
The Dr. A didn't want to rely on his own intuition and his professional background. He was blindly going with it. Where
Yeah.
Dr. B said, no, wait a minute. Based on my experiences, there are other ways to do it.
Exactly. And I think that's the part of the key is that we need to ensure that the professionals using these tools understand the limitations.
Yeah,
I
it's the
think,
education piece, right? Even with somebody who's an endodontist, highly educated, he needs that education. He needs to know that there are flaws within that tool.
Yeah, and there was a couple of cases, I think it was last year, and I've written about these where a few lawyers actually used ChatGPT to produce court briefings
That didn't exist.
that didn't exist yet, and say they were using case precedents that the machine had hallucinated. And the judge was good enough to understand, yeah, that there's a problem with this. And the lawyers who did this, they're doing it to save time, presumably.
Didn't
But
validate, did they? He still
exactly,
actually
yeah.
existed.
There was an opportunity for human in the loop, and I guess they didn't use it. And so they suffered a penalty from that. But I
In
mean,
that
how many
case, they
others?
were the human in the loop, right,
Yeah,
James? They were the
exactly.
ones. The onus was on them to go check the sources. And then it depends on which tool you use, right? So, for example, there's some the earlier versions of ChatGPT that don't give you the footnotes leading back to the sources, and Perplexity, for example, does. And it's so easy to use. You get your one, two, threes, you click on it, boom, there's the source, and then you can validate it. So there's that as well. I mean, there's all kinds of tools out there. We need to not see them with the black and white lens. We need to know that there are problems with some over others. So another complication in the process.
And in my industry, in the accounting industry, when I look up a tax question, for example, using AI, I need to know how to phrase the question to get the proper answer. And the same with legal professionals who are using these giant info bases to look up things that will help their cases.
So this
You need,
segues into prompt engineering, right?
prompt engineering,
Your tool is as good as your prompt, assuming you're using a good tool. So now we have this entire new field of prompting and how effective to make your prompting and how to find a tool that will allow follow-up of prompts so it can follow your thinking process, right? Because there's some that are disjointed. They finish with one thought and then move on. They can't continue it. So there's that piece of it too. I mean, we've just opened up a huge can of worms that we need to deal with, and we need to modify our education system to manage this new load that's come, right? You can do a whole bunch of certifications in prompt engineering. I'm constantly modifying my prompts. I'm constantly correcting them. Sometimes what I do is take the answer from one tool and put it into the other to see if I can even fine-tune it further.
It's difficult enough to do this when you have all of the background in your area. But, I worry particularly about young people who think that just asking a question in normal, everyday language is going to produce a reliable result because they don't necessarily have the experience to know what's potentially doubtful, dubious, wrong, or to
Not
go
only do
back and,
they not have the life experience, but this is the Gen Z generation is one that's lived off of texting. And texting with words like, oh, not words, but expressions like OMG, lol, right? Or WTF, which is no longer not even the English language. So we've got somewhat of a linguistically inept generation that's having to be good at prompting with tools that are highly sophisticated. We've got a big linguistic problem as well, on top of everything else. And it's so important to unpack these layers and deal with them layer after layer. And it's just not being dealt with.
And I've written about that too. I mean, there's a study being done on the decline in linguistic diversity, and it's attributed it to these automated outputs that people just follow and they become memes, and people are
Yeah.
losing their ability to express things clearly and
And then we're talking about the English language right now. And then there's the piece about other languages. For the most part, large language models are trained on English-based language only. Now, there are tools like Cohere.ai's of the world who are training their models on 113 languages and more. There's a full nuanced side of things there as well, because research is not just being done in the English spoken world. It's being done in the entire continent of Asia and Africa. We need to contend with those as well because they come with very contextualized and nuanced understandings. And how do we amalgamate all of that cultural melting pot? Never has it been this condensed ever in humanity as it is right now.
And that's a really good point, actually. What was I reading recently? I mean, there's some languages that just simply don't have words that English does. I think it was one language doesn't have a word for blue. The color blue was what I was reading. So, yeah,
Can you
you're right.
imagine the missed opportunity there?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not one size fits all for all of these solutions. They are developed for the most part in the West. And so we tend to think that our way of thinking is the global way of thinking, but it's definitely not.
Exactly. Yeah.
You've presented maybe some possible guidelines or frameworks or principles for human in the loop, and maybe you could just talk about some of those in terms of if there was an overall framework for human in the loop, what are the key points that we should build that around?
I haven't presented on it per se because I haven't found any guidelines that are formalized and accepted globally. But I think it's going to have to be an effort, maybe continent by continent, and eventually some sort of an amalgamation, say in the EU and whatnot. I know GDPR touches upon it, but that understanding is not one that is embraced everywhere yet. And all the places that I've spoken at with regards to human being in the loop, it's still a very elusive field. There's very little that's being discussed by way of getting into detail. I mean, you could have conferences on it, and we don't. We don't have gatherings where we're bringing experts together to disseminate this. So we're unfortunately in very, very early days. I've yet to find even professionals who can say we are experts in human in the loop, or I've done my PhD in this field. There's no such thing yet.
Interesting. And this is why I think, I'm looking forward to continue conversations on this because I think it's important to spark discussion among a number of people from a number of different backgrounds to get their inputs and maybe just start that conversation going. The EU's European Union's AI Act has done, I think, a good job at kind of stratifying risks in terms of outcomes from AI tools. And maybe that's something that could start with human in the loop in terms of if an AI has a potential to produce a catastrophic outcome, such as mass injustices,
Or even in cyber warfare.
cyber, yeah, exactly,
Yeah.
absolutely. Because we know cases, we see cases of mistaken drone attack on hospitals and schools and things like that. Yeah.
Exactly. And you're right. With what we're seeing in the world, with the obvious warfare, there's a full underlying, if not more robust, cyber warfare layer that's so AI driven. And we don't at large even talk about that, right? So, no, you are 1000% right. I was at a conference, AI conference, a couple of weeks ago in Boston, and the typical attendee had a PhD in neuroscience. And that was an amazing amalgamation of some brain power. And what we walked away with was that we do need to congregate more, and they're going to have more conferences on topics like this. And I'm going to bring it in the forefront for them because this is one group of intellectuals who's very open to this concept. And one of the things that I want to do is propose somewhat of a syllabus for the next conference to be had just about human in the loop from a neuroscience and ethics perspective. Some of the things that we talked about were mind-blowing within the medical field and whatnot, and they're very aware. And there is this small group of intellectuals that is very aware and slowly making pivotal changes. So it's coming. It's coming, though, that kind of conversation.
That's good to hear, and I'd certainly like to hear the outcome of that discussion. I mean, I guess there's also issues with the automation biases that we talked about in terms of, for example, I guess algorithms are being used to scan resumes for job applications. Now, I think there are some human in the loop in those processes now, but it needs constant review, I assume, that you can't just insert one human and expect the outcome to be fair all the time because things change, right? And job requirements change. And to periodically look at these results is important, not just for one person, but for multiple people to look at the results.
Yeah, absolutely, because there are a lot of missed opportunities with getting hiring talented people who get missed because the algorithm doesn't highlight them as such. And some of the tech world in Silicon Valley, the way they are starting to bypass this is by hiring external contracting companies who are actually br being brought in enough to facilitate the hiring process, where you've got humans looking at the resumes physically and then giving it to big tech and saying, "Here, we've done the vetting for you." So it's starting to happen. What means is that it's not the typical recruiter within the company that's per se doing this. It's outside vendors being brought in to do this.
That's interesting, yeah. And also, I guess, avoiding inappropriate use of data. Again, having some sort of periodic review process for automated processes that take large amounts of data and then process them, because you can think when you program these things that the outputs are going to be good, but sometimes there's garbage data that gets in there or data that's misclassified. And
A lot of times it's garbage data that gets in there. It's a lot of it is unstructured data versus structured data. It's not been labeled correctly, cataloged properly. It's happening all the time. So data quality is a huge, huge issue. Data toxicity is a huge issue, right? So how do you protect data that's compromised to begin with before it's fed into the LLM? So
And
there
I
is
think,
something called data vaulting, data cleaning. There's a lot of that. That technology has now come about. It's AI driven as well, which is kind of interesting. And what happens there is that the data that's before it's going to be ingested into the LLM, it's being cleaned in a vault. So the vendor who offers this software doesn't get to see what the data is, meaning the credit card number or the driver's license number per se. But from the metadata aspect of it, they're able to clean it up, hash it, encrypt it, and whatnot before it gets ingested into the LLM, such that data protection can be instilled. These
that's
tools are expensive.
and I want to address that expense issue. And shortly, just one thought that I wanted to touch on. You mentioned the Algorithmic Justice League earlier, and is there anything in what they're doing that could provide a pillar for the framework for human in the loop?
I think Dr. Joy Balwani is working on a framework. I mean, that's why she's been in Congress so much. She works with the FTC. So she and her team are working on it. I'm hoping to meet her in one of my trips to Boston. And she's picked up a lot of momentum, a lot of attention from some key people. So I think if anyone can make it happen, it's going to be them. Absolutely. One of the first pioneers to have brought to this issue based on her own work in her PhD that she was doing at MIT.
And what is their main point at the moment in terms of their main focus, their main concern?
Their main focus and concern is to minimize discrimination based on gender, color, class, ethnicity. That's where they're coming from at the moment. But the implication of that are huge, and they cross all industries from HR to finance to health and others and education and whatnot. So the trickle effect of that is profound. She's doing some really great groundbreaking pioneer work. She's got people's attention. It's just that needs to now translate into actual frameworks that can be regulated and mandated. We're not there yet.
But it sounds like there's some good groundwork starting on that one that,
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what are some of the barriers to adopting human in the loop? I mean, there's cost, I guess, that I mentioned earlier.
There's
Are there
lack of
other,
understanding of
yeah.
the processes themselves. It's complicated to understand how an LLM works, let alone appreciate the fact that you need humans to be in checkpoints along the process. First, we need to get people to understand how they work at a high level and not a 10,000 square foot level, but a little bit deeper than that. And then appreciate that you need folks to come in and validate. And I think we need companies to start that process. And for big companies to hire these little companies and say, here's our operational process, take a look at it, and please give us our pain points, and then going about it that way. Because if you leave it to, say, one tech company, they're not going to just take a look at it. We need now others to come in and provide that service. I can see the big four jumping on something like that and providing as a consultancy, right?
And then I guess there's the maybe competitive disadvantage of implementing this if some jurisdictions allow certain processes to go, for example, automated content moderation. If one jurisdiction allows that, but another jurisdiction requires a human in the loop, then
Unfair, and that's what's happening with GDPR. So I met a lot of Europeans about a month ago who were saying that there's a lot of bitterness amongst entrepreneurs in Europe because their hands are tied with GDPR, where in America, Canada, other parts in Asia, that's not the case. GDPR doesn't exist over there, right? And now with the new administration coming in the US, regulations may get more laxed, which means capitalism will prevail and tech industries will go full throttle ahead. So, yes, you're right. There's that issue as well. It's not going to be a uniform rollout, right? It's going to be tough to adopt something like this on a global scale. But somewhere work has to begin, even if it is at a micro level.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think also maybe the scalability issues in terms of, it's one thing to have a human in a process that's relatively contained, a process that doesn't require a whole lot of time. But if it's a global process with many
Data
tens of
traveling across
thousands,
continents. Yeah, can you
thousands
imagine?
and thousands and thousands of outputs. And yeah, I guess that's an issue in terms of
And in
implementing.
the medical and healthcare field, it's even more complicated because if you think about data residing in different cloud infrastructure, there's a lot of legacy systems that this data touches within hospitals that have not been updated. So that adds so much complication to understanding the process and where to bring people in. There's that layer too. Then there's a scalability layer. Then there's a money issue, right? Because now you're having to hire people that whose professions no longer existed before. You're having to train people where training of that sort never existed before. You're having to find people who've got multidiscipline in there under their belt that's never existed before. So there's a lot for us to contend with. And I like the idea of you have rolling out a series on talking about this piece by piece by piece, because right now you and I are going at a 10,000 square foot 10,000 feet view of this, but we need to start unpacking it little by little and bring in people who, experts who can address each problem in silos.
Yeah, I think that would be very beneficial. And I think number of different perspectives, as you said, is key. It's very important that different voices add their perspective and that the response doesn't just deal with one or two perspectives, but deals with a whole number of them. And, as you said, I mean, the complexity of some of the technology, now we have quantum computers, which until recently people were saying, well, they're 10 years off, but now Quantinuum, one of the big quantum computing companies, has pledged that they will have a fully functional quantum computer within 5 years.
Yeah,
And
Moore's law will prevail over there, right? To a certain extent, you're right. I mean, we're not there completely yet, but 5 years is not that far off. And that's going to just throw a spin in all of this.
In terms of that computer's ability to automate things, that one calculation that Google's Willow chip just recently did that would have taken a supercomputer 10 septillion years to calculate.
There is one industry that we can learn from where human checks are still quite a thing, and that's the pharmaceutical industry. So the opposite of Moore's law is Erm's law. And Erm's law says that what it allows for is a slowdown in the production of the medication before it's released. A typical medicine requires 10 years of clinical research from end to end, about $8 million worth of funding for it to get out before it can be consumed. There are a lot of humans in that loop, right? AI has not taken over. It's being used, but it's not taken over. There are a lot of people doing checks and balances, whether it's FDA, whether it's Health Canada from a regulatory perspective, pharmacists, doctors, researchers at large within the loop, they're all there. And hence, it takes a long time to get the medicine out in market. There's something to be learned there. They've slowed it down, right? Now, the tech industry at large within the Valley and elsewhere moves super fast. It moves the way Moore's law says that it does. And Erm's law applies to the pharmaceutical industry. There's something there. We need to tap into that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That slowdown, yes, it does have a cost, but it certainly in pharmaceuticals, it prevents potentially damaging pharmaceuticals from getting out there. Like, we
Now,
have
mind
recent
you,
examples.
when COVID happened, AI was in play and that mRNA vaccine came out super fast. We're understanding the ramifications of that right now, aren't we?
Yeah, no, and thank goodness for that. And certainly the quantum computer pharmaceuticals will be one of the first major applications, I think, for that, because they're so good at predicting and manipulating protein folding, and that's where a lot of
But they
pharmaceutical
are
development is.
still moving slower than the tech industry at large. The pharma tech is moving slower than tech itself. They still have the human checks and balances in place. Once they speed it up is when I'm going to get really worried, right? Yes, the mRNA vaccine was phenomenal in saving so many lives, but it did roll out pretty fast. And we're seeing some of the side effects of those vaccines now that weren't contended with back then, right? But it was such a catastrophe in the planet, we had to. I get that decision. But I'm just saying there's something that we can tap into in the pharma industry and study how they're working and see if we can replicate that, perhaps not allow it to go that slow in terms of innovation rolling out the door, but looking at that and getting that a bit more nuanced for tech and the tech industry as well.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So in terms of the benefits of human in the loop, we've already talked about the UK post office example and avoiding costly settlements from algorithmic errors. Part of the problem is if companies are going to take on an additional cost to insert humans into the loop, they're going to want to see some sort of payback. But the payback is often long term and hard to measure at the time that the investment is made. And the investment gets expensed, hits the bottom line. And people will say, well, why are you doing this? Why not just automate? So, what do you think are some of the biggest draws in terms of inserting human in the loop? Like, how do we get around these kind of barriers, like just short-term thinking? How do we expand it into the long-term benefits and get people to focus on that?
Yeah, and I think that process has already begun. I mean, look at the number of cyber attacks that are happening around the world, the cybersecurity issues that are happening. I mean, the data leaking is in the petabytes. Nefarious actors getting into the cloud infrastructure of big tech is happening every single day. That alone is going to be the impetus that's going to push this movement. We are in the early days, but it's getting worse and worse. I feel that's where it's going to start from. You're already seeing a little bit of that in the tech industry. You're already seeing data security, data privacy being in the forefront, how to have people in the actual architecture to see that data is being protected alongside automation. Because, of course, you can't just put manual hours to protect data. You need to automate that, but you need to have it such that you've got privacy engineers, security engineers supplementing that automation.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point because we are seeing more of these attacks, incursions into the even the biggest of tech
I mean, look
companies.
at what just happened to 23andMe. That entire company is brought down to its knees. It's done. It's finished. Now, what is going to happen to that data? That such precious DNA data. So, if you look at the privacy policies that's been being analyzed right now by lawyers, 23andMe said we'll never share your data, except if we get bankrupt. Guess what just happened to 23andMe? So, that's scary. And that is precedent for other tech companies. Cambridge Analytica had this, how quickly they lost so much trust in their clients and the company went down so badly. It affected Meta a whole lot. Why did Meta change its name from Facebook to Meta? Another such scenario, right? It cost them a lot of money to do that. So I think that seed is already implanted, and that's where this movement's going to start from.
You mentioned customers losing faith, and this is something that maybe companies need to understand more, and investors need to understand more. The benefit of protecting what the businesses do is key, and protection will cost some money, but it's an investment that will pay off in terms of saving the company, saving the brand, saving that value for the future.
Yep, you're right. So, in some of the conferences that I've spoken to, all in the US space, I've met some VCs and they are all asking startups about their privacy and security postures. They're asking, what are you doing about it prior to us giving you funding? How do we use that to estimate the value, the valuation of your company? Those questions are being asked now. Startups are having to contend with it. They're having to find out how they're going to implement privacy by design principles. What does that mean to operationalize it? So the movement has begun.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I think it's, maybe in terms of ongoing annual corporate disclosures, whether it's with financial statements or other filings. So, corporations have already, a lot of companies, most companies, probably public companies, have now adopted environmental disclosures, their carbon neutral goals, their environmental consequences of their actions. And that's kind of required disclosure now. So, maybe human in the loop, there could be some sort of disclosures there in terms of key automated processes that have particular risk to the company's operations.
And how is that risk being mitigated? What's your risk posture like? And those questions need to be asked ahead of time. Show me your heat map on those risks, right? Whether that's happening or not, to my knowledge, I just don't know. It's such a new nascent space, but definitely one that is coming into people's attention and their bandwidth to contend with, no doubt.
I think there'd be a lot of pushback on disclosures in terms of potentially disclosing competitive information that your competitors could use. But maybe it's an opportunity for outside auditors to come in and at least look at the processes and then maybe certify somehow without getting to the specifics, but certify that the key processes and key standards are being maintained.
Exactly. And I think it's all going to start with the public at large being educated and them demanding from companies that are gathering their data as to how are you protecting my data? What are you doing with it? Why should I hand it over to you? What do you need this for? Why do you want my voice print? Why do you want my retinal image, right? For example, when I travel in the US and I've traveled so much, I have the option of declining retinal scans there, but I don't have that in Canada. Or if I do, I've been told, okay, so you have to go into that little room and we're going to go through some processes and whatnot. I was like, okay, forget it, right? Those are questions that need to be asked, but only once the public is educated. And I think we really need children to be educated as well, so that as they grow into adulthood, they can compound that knowledge that they have. I mean, we're living in a society where we hand a one-year-old an iPhone and he knows how to scroll really fast. They can't tie their shoelaces, but they can get into different apps and call your boss and call everybody else and their uncle, but they can't tie their shoelaces because we gave them this gadget without protecting them, right? So the fundamental missing piece here is education for society at large.
For the public users, for the regulators, the lawmakers, for children, for sure. In terms of next steps with human in the loop, I guess it's a question of getting that large conversation going.
Absolutely.
So,
Conferences need to be held around just this one topic because it's so big. It has so many layers, so many nuances to it, so many folks who can put their two cents in, from neuroscientists to ethicists to engineers to lawyers to doctors, right? Everybody can bring their perspective and make this field become robust.
And I think to develop means to sell human in the loop as a good move, I think is maybe important that people talk about it as not a barrier to business, but an advantage to business. That businesses that do have humans in the loop, that could be a competitive advantage for them. They could tell their customers. And certainly, one example I think that we've all run into is these horrible customer service systems that are all automated, right? And you can't get to a human customer service agent to deal with your problem. You have to deal with a robot and you don't
Who
get the
wants your
answer.
voice print?
Exactly.
Anything else? Exactly. No, I agree with you. It's like with anything else, it's a matter of dialogue. It's like in my privacy space that I work in, we're constantly seen as the folks who don't allow innovation to be enabled. We need to turn that rhetoric upside down, and we're doing it in privacy, but now human in the loop is going to be a science that's going to need that kind of help as well. We're going to have to show companies that it's going to be a business enabler, not a disabler. We're going to have to turn technical requirements into business requirements such that the business impetus will be there for them to adopt this practice. But we need the right people to come together and have this dialogue.
For sure. And as you said, there's such tremendous potential with technology and so much we can do with it. And if we can make people understand the importance of it, but also businesses to understand the competitive advantages of doing the right thing, protecting themselves as well as their customers, I think that could be a key point going forward. So we'll have to hope for that conversation to start. And I know you're doing what you can on your side to do that. Very interested to hear the outcome of that conference that you talked about with the neuroscientists.
Yeah, I'm actually going to put that proposal forward to them to see if there's appetite to host a conference just on this topic. It's the right minds there on the table, the right intellectuals that we need. So hopefully, fingers crossed.
Well, that's great. So we look forward to more discussions on this, Simon. I think we've kind of opened the topic here and put a lot of the issues on the table.
Absolutely.
And we'll look forward to more conversations. We'll bring some more people to the table on this and explore particular aspects of it and maybe try to just show people the real advantages of human in the loop and where it could be really
Exactly.
important.
Yeah, and we can do it industry by industry if you'd like. For example, target this insurance industry first, and then banking and whatnot, and unpack it to see where the issues lies within each one.
That's important. And those specific examples, I think, where it's one thing to talk about generalities, but when people hear and understand specific examples, I think it's a lot easier to understand the relevance of it and the importance of it.
Exactly. And it makes more of an impact, right? It becomes all of a sudden, oh my goodness, that's my life. It's so relevant to me. For example, the auto insurance company saying, hey, we'll reduce your premium by $200 if you activate this app on your phone and allow it to monitor your driving habits. The average person's like, oh yeah, that's great. I spend now 400 instead of 600. But no, don't do that. Don't do that. That's surveillance and future rejections for your insurance coverage, right? But people don't understand that at large.
Yeah, I declined that particular option,
Good
even though
for
it cost me a
you.
little bit of money. Yeah,
I
though.
know. I just declined it too in my auto renewal. I was like, nope, you're not doing that for me. But ma'am, it's going to reduce your premium. Like, I know, but I'm opting out.
Well, let's see where the discussion goes. And Simon, thank you again for being on the Quantum Feedback Loop. It's always great to talk to you, and look forward to our next discussion on Human in the Loop.
Yep, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Okay, thank you. Our thanks go to today's guest and to you for listening to the Quantum Feedback Loop. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out The Quantum Record at thequantumrecord.com. The Quantum Record is a monthly journal of philosophy, science, technology, and time, where you'll find the latest developments in our rapidly evolving technological world.